This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the MLB Pipeline Podcast. I'm Jason Ratliff here with Jim Callis, Jonathan Mayo, and our special guest, Greg Amsinger of MLB Network. The top 100 draft prospects list, depending on when you're listening to this, is out or soon to be out. And there will be the special MLB Network show, Top 100 Draft Prospects, airing on Wednesday night, 6 p.m. Then it'll re-air, I believe, at 1:30 a.m. that night / Thursday morning. Then you can catch it a couple times on Saturday as well. So make sure you tune in and catch that. Jim, Jonathan, Greg, and Harold Reynolds will all be breaking down the 2022 draft list. So we're primarily going to focus on that on today's podcast episode. A little bit later, we're also going to talk about some of the youngest ranked pitching prospects on each team's top 30 prospects list. We're going to talk a little bit about Roland Heeman, a baseball legend who just recently passed away. And we will wrap up by answering a question, as we always do, in the mailbag. First of all, Greg Amsinger, thank you very much for joining us. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I just taped the big countdown show yesterday with Jonathan and Jim and Harold. We had a blast. I always look forward to doing those shows.
Yeah, you guys seem like you always do have a blast. And I know in doing a little bit of research for this podcast episode, that was one of the things that I read about you is I think Harold in particular said that you just keep things lively on the set. Is that how big of a part of your job is that?
Well, you know, the way I look at it, the word flow is everything I care about. I want the show to flow, because I feel like audibly is equally as important as the information that you're getting and the visual stimulation of how the graphics and the video, all that look. So I really want it to sound like a conversation, which is hard to do when it is contrived. It is a plan. You have a rundown, you have producers, they go through which guys you want to talk about. I don't want it to come off that way. I want it to come off as much more off the cuff, even though people that are well versed in baseball content, they know that we have a rundown, they know that we have a plan, but I just don't want it to feel that way. I don't want it to sound that way. So my goal is just to keep stirring the pot to get these guys to forget they're on TV. I fail sometimes. Every once in a blue moon, I hit a home run, and it ends up being a pretty fun TV show. So we had a good TV show yesterday for sure.
Yeah, Greg, I think the one thing that I missed is, I like when we're all together, because I think that's when we really can sort of play off each other a little more. We made the most of it, some of it remotely. I guess the question I have, I know that you love the draft. You love doing these shows. You love doing the draft. The biggest question that I have, which I've never been able to understand, is that people don't really get this, but on draft night, you do like that preview show, then we do the full length show. You don't move out of your chair for like 48 straight hours. It's like social network kind of coding stuff. True or false, you have a catheter hooked up. Like what is going on there? How is that even possible?
People have asked me this question before. No joke. I was blessed with the bladder of a camel, apparently. I believe in mental control. I can talk about a lot of philosophy in life and, you know, brain power and things like that. I'm into all of that. I don't believe in being cold. I think that's a decision you make. Being hot, too hot, is a decision that you make. I will not ever take off my suit jacket in 100 degree weather, because I am going to get acclimated and I'm going to get comfortable. You won't see me sweating at 100 degrees. It's a mental decision that I make. So to go to the bathroom, I don't stop drinking. I have like two huge Trenta Starbucks iced coffees on the day of the draft. I am drinking them constantly, and I will be sitting in that chair. I can't get up and move. There's too much traffic during commercial break, so I can't go anywhere. So I'm there for 6.5 hours straight. And I've never even had to go to the bathroom. I've been hosting the draft for 13 years, and I'm so concerned with what's going on. I've never had to go. I've never had to feel like I had to go to the bathroom. So I believe in mental control in a big way, and it works for me, I think. I'm a weirdo, guys. I'm totally weird, and it works.
We knew this.
I think we've already peaked here in the podcast. I don't know if we'll be able to top that, but my admiration for Greg is even higher now. But seriously, Greg, I mean, as you mentioned, we've been doing these shows now for 13 years. And one of the things that I just wanted to have our listeners understand is, and ask you, is how much you love the draft. Because I remember, I was telling Jonathan before we started recording, I remember in 2010, so it was our second year of doing shows with MLB Network for the draft. And you were jacked up, Greg. You were asking me, I think I wrote in an Alex Wimmers scouting report, and people probably don't remember Alex Wimmers, who was a first round pick out of Ohio State as a pitcher. But do you remember what got you all excited about Alex Wimmers? Can you remember?
I can't remember why I was fired up.
Anyway, I had written, he held the career batting average record at Moeller High, which is where Griffey and Larkin and Buddy Bell and all these big leaguers went. And you were like, really, you were asking me about that. You were really pumped up. And I was like, wow, he's not just, you know, reading off a teleprompter, he cares. But I mean, how much, just tell everybody how much you enjoyed the draft, because I think that enthusiasm comes through every year, or not every year, multiple times a year when we do draft related shows.
So as a young sports fan growing up, I was mesmerized by the draft in all sports, because it's hard. I could tell I always wanted to do this. I always wanted to work in television. I could tell it was a very difficult show to host. And I had an opportunity to host at MLB Network. No one seemed like they were pouncing on it in 2009. And I went to the executive producer at the time, John Entz, and I was like, look, I know I'm like one of the younger hosts here, but I would love to host the draft. And he's like, you're the only person that said that to me. You're in, you got the gig. And I just love the level of difficulty. You know, when there's 30 seconds to go, and I can't tee you guys up anymore because the commissioner's about to walk out. There's 5 seconds before the commissioner's going to walk out. I'm talking and talking and talking, and all of a sudden the commissioner hasn't walked out yet. They're still waiting. I can't tee you guys up again because you guys don't have the traffic I'm getting. So I am looking in a monitor to see an image walk over my shoulder, and I'm just talking and talking and talking, and I'm just filling, and it's verbal diarrhea until I see this man walk across the stage to the podium, and then I lay out. That constant drill for 6.5 hours to most people would be the equivalent of waterboarding. To me, I think that is such a fun puzzle to put together. It's so difficult. I enjoy it. I love ad-libbing. I don't write any scripts. I have scripts, obviously, for the draft, but for my normal show on MLB Tonight, I'm ad-libbing everything. And for the draft, I love the preparation. I remember interviewing the voices of March Madness. This is one of my favorite interviews ever, Billy Packer, Jim Nance, and Dick Enberg. And the late Dick Enberg said to me, his favorite part of March Madness was finding out which teams he would be calling in a regional. And he loved the research. And I was mesmerized by that. And now I understand why he said that. I love the research that is involved in the draft. I love getting to know these guys. And let's also keep in mind that my enthusiasm probably goes all the way back to our first draft. We were all very nervous. We didn't know what it was going to be like in Studio 42. One kid showed up. He was from freaking New Jersey. And we're like, there's no chance this kid's going to go in the first round. We keep showing this poor kid. It ended up being Mike Trout. And I feel like the baseball gods and the TV gods got together and blessed MLB Network. And I've been enthusiastic about the draft ever since then. And guys, it has grown dramatically since that day. And I'm so proud of where it is now. And I know other drafts get a lot more attention, but my goodness, I think we put together a really good show. Every year, I'm so proud of how smooth our draft is. The best draft of all the sports. I really truly mean that, and I'm proud to say it.
I just have to interject real quick, because I remember that first draft, because I was the sideline guy, and you threw to me. I mean, I was about ready to ask Mike Trout what he ate for dinner that night. Like, I was out, I was done, and I was very grateful when the Angels took him in the first round. So that's my memory of that, and you know, the constant trying to talk to Mike Trout, who he's a very nice man, but you know, he's not the most loquacious guy we've ever had on set. So it was, and he was in high school. So it was, right. It was a lot, but yes, that got us going in a hurry. I just wanted to interject that because that's my memory of our first draft together.
And having Greg on here, he's just an absolute pro. He's basically answering all the questions I had to ask him without even having to ask him the questions I wanted to ask, like, you know, what do you think is more important to you, the preparation or the ability to ad lib? And then, and before I even ask the question, you're answering that question. And I was going to ask what your favorite draft moment was. And you I think, answered that with the Mike Trout moment. But so you guys have been working together now since 2009, that first draft. I wanted to take a second here to see just how well Jim and Jonathan actually know Greg. So a little Pipeline podcast pop quiz, which our good friend Danny G greatly dislikes, but we're doing it anyway. All right, here we go.
Are we buzzing in or are you alternating? What are we doing here?
You're buzzing in.
Okay. Uh-oh. I will buzz.
Greg is one of how many siblings?
This is embarrassing.
Well, see, I kind of cheated because I looked at Wikipedia.
That's fine.
I wanted to see where he went to school before we started.
That's fine. You cheated. What's the answer?
I believe he has six siblings.
That's correct. One of seven siblings, five brothers, one sister.
Where was it? It was a large family.
Yeah, huge family in St. Louis.
Where do you fall in the family order there, Greg?
I'm second oldest, but, you know, I could always beat up my older brother, Joe. So I got the street cred from my siblings like I was the oldest.
All right, where was Greg's first job out of college? Jim, you cheated. You probably saw this too, or can I
just let Jim answer this? This is terrible.
I don't remember. I remember where he went to school. I'm prepared for that question.
You probably remember it when I give you multiple choice. But Joplin, Missouri; Missoula, Montana; Terre Haute, Indiana; or Wheeling, West Virginia.
It was Terre Haute because I remember thinking of Indiana State for some reason.
You know why? I was very excited about Sean Manaya.
There you go.
Sean Manaya was coming out. And he was an Indiana State Sycamore. So, yes, you do remember that conversation.
The most famous Indiana State Sycamore athlete of all time, right?
Yeah, Larry Bird played baseball at Indiana State. And I think that's where he messed up his finger. Like, I think he got a ground ball, like, broke his finger. Yeah, he played a game or two when he was at Indiana State.
Wow.
We'll get Larry Bird on next time and ask him about that.
Okay, next question. Which of the following has Greg not broadcast? Indoor professional football, paintball, roller derby, Tour de France, or the World Series of Video Games?
I'm going to go with roller derby because I don't ever remember seeing roller derby on TV. I'm going to pick roller derby.
I'm going to pick paintball because for the same reason, I don't think I've ever seen paintball broadcast before.
Oh, then you've missed out. Because, Greg, the correct answer. And to my knowledge, and maybe you have done this, but to my knowledge, the only thing on that list you have not broadcast is roller derby, but maybe you have.
That is 100% correct. And Jonathan Mayo, shame on you for not watching the Collegiate Paintball Championships back in 2005, I believe. It was one of the great athletic moments I've ever seen. Let me just paint a picture for you. There are a bunch of deflatable bunkers, okay? Inflatable bunkers. And it's capture the flag. It was Ohio State against Florida, the national championship. It's 5-on-5. And it was four Ohio State Buckeyes left against one, the sniper, the guy who had the best shot. He was in the back row usually. Well, the sniper for Florida was 6'9", 320 pounds. So they're peppering his bunker he's hiding behind with a bunch of paintball pellets. He jumps up out of nowhere. He's about to lose and runs. And with one shot on each guy, smashes him in the face with a pellet and wins the national championship. Does not, the referees come and check him. They missed him. 6'9", 320, was not hit by a drop of paint. It was one of the most dramatic, incredible athletic moments I've ever covered in my career.
Wow.
Is there a video of that? When we're done with this podcast, can we watch this somewhere?
No, he just painted.
I want to hear Greg's call by his play-by-play call of this.
Yeah,
my analyst was professional paintball player B. Youngs, and we went crazy when he did it. It was unbelievable.
I'm looking forward to the movie version with Vince Vaughn and Ben Stiller.
Unbelievable. Okay, last question for you guys. And this is not so much a question about Greg, but Which player was Greg talking about when he recounted this memorable interview for Cardinals Magazine in 2016? This is when he was still in college at Lindenwood College, as you knew, Jim, or Lindenwood University now, I believe, and working at KMOX Radio. I interviewed blank when he was traded to the Cardinals in 2000. I expected to see this chiseled, strong guy, and this dude is sitting in his locker stall, no shirt on, and drinking a Busch Light, and I'm thinking, wow, this is blank, and he's not ripped at all. He doesn't care what you think, just a man's man. I'm like, that's a baseball player. Was he talking about A, Will Clark, B, Jim Edmonds, C, Gary Gaetti, or D, Fernando Tatis?
That sounds like Will Clark.
Yeah, I'll go with Will Clark.
Well done.
That was Will Clark.
I had to get one right just to save face.
It was unbelievable, guys. He crushed 8 Busch Light before the scrum was over. I learned so much about college just from Will Clark in that one scrum interview.
Unbelievable. All right, Greg, I want to ask you to tell us about the craziest or funniest or weirdest, wildest moment that you've ever had on air. I know that I did college radio back in the 1900s in Missouri as well. I was at a homecoming football game at Central Methodist University in Fayette, Missouri. Homecoming game there. All the pregame festivities, float circling around the track, homecoming candidates being paraded around. They go to start the game, and there's a delay, and nobody knows why. And somebody comes flying into the broadcast booth frantically, but trying to keep cool. You kind of tell that this guy was kind of trying to keep cool, but he was scared. And he's like, anyone in here licensed to referee college football games? the conference had forgotten to hire the referees for the game. They had to cancel homecoming and play it that Monday afternoon.
No way.
Probably. I wanted to buy you a little time there for you to come up with your craziest, weirdest, wildest broadcast experience. You have something for us?
I feel like I have a laundry list of moments, but I will try to get it to just 3. Wild Card Wednesday, which was the last day of the regular season 2011, was the greatest night of television of my career. Every game mattered, and it proved why a show like MLB Tonight was important. It was just crazy. I felt like we were really having this moment with fans that made MLB Network incredibly significant. Go back and just watch the last day of the regular season. There are highlights everywhere. Evan Longoria was amazing. I would also say there was a moment where I'm going to break, and this was crazy. Harold Reynolds is sitting on a chair, and there was a foul ball down the line of Wrigley Field, and an outfielder didn't catch the ball because there was a reliever sitting in a chair not paying attention, and he kind of ran around him, and the ball dropped. So we did this live look-in, and we had our analysts in Studio 42, and I go, Harold, what should the outfielder have done there? And Harold's sitting on a chair down the left field line of Studio 42, and I don't think he truly knew what was about to happen to him. He was joking. He was like, well, what should have happened is that outfielder should have just trucked him right over him. Out of nowhere, Eric Burns lowers his shoulder and smokes Harold Reynolds on live TV. Harold goes flying off the chair. He's completely and utterly stunned, and I get upset on live TV. And Eric Burns thinks it's funny. I'm like, Eric, you just crushed the face of our network. What is wrong with you? Like, I'm yelling at him because I forgot I was on TV. My friend just got smoked on live television, and it shouldn't have happened. It was crazy. So that was number 2 on my list. Number 3 goes back to the first play-by-play game I ever did. I'm doing high school football. Now, I went to college in the same town that I went to high school in. So it was Duchesne High School against St. Charles High, my alma mater. Opening kickoff, I'm so excited. It's my first game. I'm doing play-by-play for the college radio station. We're doing high school football. And I know my brother Rich is a junior on the varsity football team. So I get to call my brother Rich's first varsity game. And I'm in the booth, and he goes sprinting down the field, opening kickoff. The season has just started, okay? First kickoff, right? Everyone's standing up. They're all fired up, packed house. My brother Rich outruns everyone trying to tackle the guy that catches the ball. This big dude turns around and levels my brother Rich, like flattens him.
And the guy that catches the kickoff runs right over my brother Rich's spot, may have stepped on him, and runs the ball all the way back 95 yards for a touchdown to start my broadcasting career. That was the first highlight, first moment I covered as a broadcaster, was my brother Rich getting trampled in a high school football game.
I love that your memories consist primarily of your friends and family getting run over.
All right. Yes, it was like traumatic, I guess.
Clearly. I'm glad we could be here for you, a safe space where you could process all this.
You know, I'm sitting here while he's telling these stories. I'm trying to find video of Eric Burns destroying Harold Reynolds. And that video has been taken down, but there's revenge. You know the revenge video part of this, Greg, where I guess a little bit later, Harold was demonstrating what to do on a double play when Eric came in, and he hit Eric Burns in the groin area with the baseball.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. That was dirty, but I knew it was coming. I think Eric Burns knew it was coming. He laid there for a while, but he didn't get mad about it because he knew he deserved it.
We need to find video of this. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, the primary reason we have Greg on the show today is we want to talk about this top 100 draft prospects list. We are going to do an experts draft with Greg, Jim, and Jonathan. They are going to select who they would pick. We're going to give Greg the number one overall pick. We're going to do that when we come back next on the MLB Pipeline Podcast.
It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
Welcome back to the MLB Pipeline Podcast. I'm Jason Ratliff here with Jim Callis, Jonathan Mayo, and Greg Amsinger of the MLB Network. We're talking top 2022 MLB draft prospects, new list out, show out on MLB Network, and we're going to do an experts draft. Greg will pick first, followed by Jim, followed by Jonathan. We're going to go five rounds, working off of the 2022 top 100 draft prospects list. Greg, you had a losing season last year, so you get the number one overall pick this year. This is a very enticing list, especially at the top. Who are you going to take?
I like young players who I feel safe about. I'm a big believer in short arms. I don't know why. Guys with stubby arms are always they find the barrel better. The longer swings I stay away from, that's why I'm taking Tamar Johnson with the number one pick in this draft. I think this 5'10" left-handed bat is going to produce. He's going to get to the big leagues at the age of 21. And to me, he's a surefire big league hitter. I don't care where he plays in the infield. He's a big league hitter, and he'll be my number one pick.
Wow. Going with the short-armed Tamar Johnson. Guys, you're going to have to rework your a blurb to get that in there. Who was the major league hitter who was sort of famous for having short arms?
There's only one.
I don't know.
Altuve has short arms.
He certainly does. All right. So
yes, he does.
Tamar Johnson, a fantastic pick. 17 years old, one of the younger players on this top 100 draft prospects list. All right. Tamar Johnson off the board to Greg. Jim, you are on the clock.
I felt like I kind of had the easiest pick here because much like Jonathan and I were torn as to who should be number one, it came down to two guys when we did the list. And so I knew I was taking either Tamar Johnson or Drew Jones. Tamar is probably the best high school hitter in years. Drew Jones has more well-rounded tool base. He's very similar to his dad, Andrew. And when all is said and done, Drew Jones could be a 60 hitter, 60 power, 70 runs, 70 arms, 70 center fielder. He's pretty exciting ceiling. So I'll take Drew Jones at number two. And I think Jonathan should take a Georgia high school player also with third pick, just to keep this going.
All right. Jonathan, you're on the clock. Has Jim made your pick for you?
No, I will take a high school player. He is not, however, in Georgia. He is in Florida. I'm going to take Elijah Green. And there is some risk To Greg's point, you know, there are some swing and miss concerns with Elijah Green, but he also has, I think, the highest ceiling of any of these three high schoolers that we're talking about right here. You know, we're talking plus defense and center field, plus speed, close to top of the scale speed. He has ridiculous raw power, and it's just going to be a question of him refining his approach at the plate to get to it. And it shows up. This isn't just a batting practice player. This is a guy who's got a lot of power, and he's just going to have to go out and show that there isn't too much swing and miss. I mean, these days, no one seems to care whether you strike out a good amount, as long as you get to that power, and the power and speed is going to play. So I'm happy to get Elijah Green, and he's at IMG Academy in Florida.
All right, so our first round, we see three high school hitters off the board, and Greg, first pick of the second round.
I'm going to shock my expert friends. I'm going to go with my favorite player, and this is, Tomar clearly has the biggest upside. I am taking Jace Young. He's a third baseman slash second baseman from Texas Tech. I'm a big fan of younger brothers of other big leaguers, of other guys that are good players. And this is a younger brother who I think to me is the next Max Muncy. He's that talented of a hitter. I love watching video of his swing. I think he gives you a bit more athleticism in terms of defensive versatility. He can legit play second base, I think, and third base. I want a surefire big leaguer. I think Jace Young is a surefire big leaguer. I'm taking him with my second pick.
I like that pick, Greg. Do you think that, like a young Greg Amsinger, Jace Young used to terrorize Josh Young in the same household and established his superiority, even though he was not the oldest brother?
I don't think so, because his older brother is actually bigger, like a big dude. And my older brother, I love my brother, Joe. He's like, where's Waldo? Very, very skinny. And I always weighed more than him. I'm large, and I could kind of muscle him around. I will say this. I don't have the grit that Jace has, because when you have an older brother that pushes you around, it teaches you grit. And that's the one thing kids today are missing. So I think the grittiness of being that younger brother, it pays off. A lot of our friends are younger brothers. I mean, Harold Reynolds was the youngest. Al Leiter was the youngest. Dan Plesac had an older brother that was in minor league baseball, that he was the original stud. The younger brother thing matters. So I like Jace Young a lot.
I like that. I'm going to stay on the same thing. I feel like I'm just copying Greg and following his lead here. I am going to take a guy who I hope winds up at third base, but who I think is the best all-around college offensive player. That's Jacob Berry. He's transferred from Arizona to LSU. He hits for average. He hits for power. He draws walks. He hits all types of pitching. He's a switch hitter who's productive from both sides of the plate. Greg loves his comps. I got a switch hitting Andrew Vaughn comp on Jacob Berry. Maybe he winds up in the outfield. Maybe he winds up at first base. The guy's going to rake. So I'm taking Jacob Berry with the fifth overall pick in this draft.
All right, I'm going to break the string here and not follow suit. You know, I feel like I could take a college bat, but you know what? I'm going high school arm here. I'm going to take Dylan Lesko, the right-hander from the Georgia prep ranks. He's the best pitcher in the class. I think he has a chance to be a frontline starter when all is said and done. If he weren't a high school right-hander, you know, you might even hear about him, you know, at the very top of the draft, but since that's never happened, you know, I don't think this is going to be the year, because this is a very hitting heavy draft class, especially at the top. But I don't want to wait, because I'm afraid that he would have been gone with my next pick. And just the ceiling and the feel for pitching, you know, makes him the standout pitcher in this class by far.
All right, first pitcher off the board, we go to round three. Greg, back on the clock.
So this again, I'm going with my favorite guys, and I want guys that I know will play in the big leagues. And I'm going with a shortstop, Carter Young, who I do not think will play shortstop in the big leagues. He'll play some shortstop. But to me, the bat, I love it. And he put on a considerable amount of strength since he showed up in college at Vanderbilt. I think his upside's dramatically higher than even a Dansby Swanson, who was the number one pick. I love his athleticism. I love his ability to play multiple different positions. To me, I could see this guy, who's not huge, 6 foot, like 185, 180 pounds. I could see him being a little bigger version of Francisco Lindor offensively and giving you the Ben Zobrist glove defensively all over the diamond. I love this kid. I think he's terrific, and his makeup's great. Yeah, he swings and misses, strikes out a lot, but I'm taking him with my third selection.
I like, you know, what I like about this, I like Greg's picking his favorite players. 84 strike. I'm going to question the pick a little bit, Greg. I think you could have waited maybe till your fifth pick to get Carter Young, but I like the gusto. I'm going to go college. See, I'm just copying Greg, though. I'm going to go college shortstop. The third straight time, I'm going to mirror Greg's pick. I'm going to take Brooks Lee out of Cal Poly. He's arguably the best pure hitter on the college side. He's going to have some power as well. I think he could be a 2025 home run guy. Great in the Cape Cod League last year. You know, a little question. I probably not a shortstop. He doesn't have that classic shortstop quickness. He's got a strong arm. I think he winds up at second base, third base. He's one of these guys who grew up around the game. You know, his dad's the coach. His dad, Larry's the coach at Cal Poly. So I really like Brooks Lee here with my third pick.
All right, I'm gonna go college bat here. I like athletes, so I, you know, so if you can find a college player with upside and ceiling, then I'm gonna do this. So I'm gonna take Brock Jones from Stanford. Went to Stanford as a two sport guy, played a year of football, mostly on special teams before starting to focus on baseball. Took a big step forward last year as he started to focus more, but. Not only does he have premium athleticism, can go get the ball in center field. He's got a ton of power, but he brings that football mentality also. He'd run through a wall to help you win. And, that's what you need to win championships. So Brock Jones is my guy in this round.
All right. You are listening to the MLB Pipeline podcast. We are doing an experts draft for the 2022 draft with Jim Callis, Jonathan Mayo, and Greg Amsinger. We are through three rounds. You should probably note here that Greg is doing this from memory. Jim and Jonathan have the benefit of having everything out in front of them. Greg's doing this on his phone from memory based on his prep for the show, which is pretty incredible. And Greg, you're up in round four.
Well, it's funny because I, as I get ready for a show, I usually have a list of 10 guys that I remember that are my favorite when I watch the video of all these players. This, to me, my next pick, my fourth pick, is the best catcher in this class of all the guys I saw. It's another younger brother of a big leaguer, which matters. Daniel Susek, love this kid, Arizona Wildcat. He's big, 6'4", 205. He reminds me, here's your comp, Tyler Stevenson, who I think is becoming an emerging star with the Cincinnati Reds.
Great.
Big, strong, leader behind the plate. I love his bat. I think his bat's for real. He's going to hit. So I think he stays behind the plate. The tall 6'4" thing, I don't think the switch hitting's going to stay. I think he's a right-handed bat in the big leagues. I'm taking him. I'm taking the younger brother of Andrew Susek. Daniel Susek is my fourth pick.
You're prescient. I'll just jump in for a second because I wrote up Daniel Susek. He's pretty much given up hitting left-handed. So,
that's good. I'm happy about that.
Yeah, you won't see him. You probably won't see him hit left-handed this spring.
I think he could be a middle-of-the-order bat. That's how much I like the way this kid's swing looks from the right side.
All right, Jim, you're up.
I'm going to go with Chase DeLotter, outfielder out of James Madison. Really intrigued me. You know, I think he'd be a little bit more famous, but James Madison only played a half schedule last year. And so even though he had a great year, he only played 28 games. And they went to the Cape Cod League, tied for the lead in homers, led the Cape Cod League in slugging. You know, the left-handed power is his most attractive tool, but he's a 6'4", 235-pound athlete. He's got a really disciplined approach, so I think he's going to hit. Runs well for his size. He's got a chance to stay in center because he's a solid runner. He's got a strong arm, so he can definitely play right. I think he might be the, I'm not saying he's going to go number one overall, but he's kind of the sleeper pick to me of the guy who is probably getting the least play, who could go number one, but could go number one in the end. So I will take Chase DeLauder here my fourth pick and the 11th pick overall in this draft.
All right, Jonathan.
Yeah, I have Greg in my brain right now. He's talking about Tamar Johnson and wanting guys who hit. So I'm going to take the guy who I think is still on the board who has the best chance to be a plus hitter, and that's Cam Collier. That's Luke Collier's son. Plus, you know, the MLB bloodlines are always a good thing. He is super young. because he reclassified. So he'll, I think he'll still only be 17 at the time of the draft. He'll be attending Chipola Junior College, one of the better junior college programs in the country. He can flat out hit all fields. There's going to be power to come, but he doesn't sell out for power, doesn't swing and miss that much. He's got a plus arm. I think he's going to look really good at third base at the next level. You know, he's pretty athletic. So I think he'll do a good job at third, but it's really that bat that I'm buying here in round four.
All right. And that ends round four. We go on to the final round, only one pitcher off the board, which I guess is not much of a surprise considering there's only one pitcher in the top 12 on the top 100 draft prospects list. Are we going to have a run on pitchers here in the final round?
I am definitely leading the fifth round with a pitcher. And to me, it's a gamble, but it's worth taking. I'm going Kumar Rocker. That's my fifth pick. I love Kumar Rocker. I like guys that have an edge, guys that are out to prove something. Worst case scenario, he's definitely going to be in the big leagues. In my opinion, yeah, there's concern, the shoulder, the elbow. He'll eventually be in the big leagues, and he might be a reliever. But 100 with a nasty slider, I'll take it as reliever. But I'm banking on my medical staff getting this guy ready to go and being in my rotation. You can't teach size, deception, and stuff. And man, he loves to compete. Kumar Rocker is my fifth and final selection.
I like it. I like it. I am going to go pitcher as well. I'm going to go pitcher with physical questions also. I will say, Jonathan, I love the Cam Collier pick. I was going to take Cam Collier in this round where he's still there. I will go Connor Prelip, University of Alabama, left-hander. I if this guy was healthy and he's coming back from Tommy John surgery last May, so at least we know what he's dealing with, I think we'd be talking about him as a potential number one overall pick. He's got, you know, one of the best sliders in the college class. It's mid-80s with two plane break. It's up to 90 miles an hour. He's got a fastball that gets up to 95 miles an hour with running downhill plane. If he comes back like a lot of guys after rehabbing the Tommy John surgery and is throwing even harder, that's all the better. He's got feel for changeup. He's athletic. He puts his pitches wherever he wants. It's stuff. It's control. It's command. 6'2". I really like Connor Prelip. So I will take Connor Prelip and bank on a full return to health from Tommy John surgery.
All right, Jonathan, final pick.
I'm going to prove you, Jason, to have been very prescient. I am going to take a pitcher, but I'm going to take my second straight high school arm. I'm going to take Jackson Ferris, high school lefty from Florida, 6'4", 190 pounds. He's going to fill out that frame. He's going to throw even harder, and he's already up to 95 with good life with his fastball. He has a chance to have three plus pitches. It's almost an old-fashioned 12-6 curve. He's got a really good feel for his changeup. Like I said, there's projection. He's going to get seen a lot. He's at IMG Academy also. So I think scouts are going to come in. You know, they're going to see Elijah Green. They're going to see Jackson Ferris pitch against really good competition. And I think he is going to kind of keep rising up the ranks. I could see him sneaking into a top 10 when all is said and done over the course of a full spring. So I'll close things out with the high school southpaw.
All right, there we have it. Our experts draft, the top 15 picks of the 2022 draft. Well, check back in what, about 20 years and see who came out on top in this exercise. Put that in your calendars. Hey, Greg, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. Always enjoy watching you guys work together on the draft and on everything that goes into it. We really appreciate the time today.
Well, hey, listen, thanks for the invite. I love talking about this stuff. Amateur baseball, the future of the game. It's so exciting. And Jonathan and Jim are the best in the business at it. So it was a great, great time. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
All right. We are going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to discuss some of the youngest pitching prospects on each team's top 30 prospects list. That's coming up next on the MLB Pipeline podcast.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Welcome back to the MLB Pipeline Podcast. Jason Ratliff, Jim Callis, Jonathan Mayo. We have now lost Greg Amsinger, but what a pleasure it was talking to him and listening to some of his tales. Guys, we've been talking about a lot of young players, 2022 draft prospects. We'll continue along that theme, though no longer necessarily we're not going to be talking about this year's draft prospects, but we are going to be looking at some of the youngest ranked pitching prospects in baseball. Last week, we discussed and had a story looking at each team's youngest ranked hitting prospect, and now we turn to the mound and look at each team's youngest ranked pitching prospect, and we will highlight a couple here. Jim and Jonathan, talk about a couple of guys each, and Jonathan, why don't you start? Where do you want to go? Carter Baumler? Chase Petty?
No, I'll go Carter Baumler with the Orioles. I feel like when we talk about the Orioles system, which obviously is a really good one right now, we tend to talk about the advanced bats. We talked with Brad Selick, their scouting director, in last week's podcast. You know, they've taken three straight college bats. Adley Rutschman is the number one prospect in baseball. So we don't talk that much about the arms in the system, and there aren't as many, but Carter Baumler is kind of interesting to me because he is one of the guys that the Orioles went over slot to sign when they took Heston Kerstedt number two overall. That gave them some flexibility in the shortened draft, and they took Baumler in the fifth round and gave him $1.5 million to sign. We're gonna have to wait a little bit to kind of see what he's really about. He was really good at Instructs last fall, but then he blew out his elbow and he had Tommy John surgery. But he's super athletic. He used to play football. He's got a chance to have 2+ pitches, maybe 3 above average pitches with his fastball, his curve. He's got a good feel for a changeup, which is developing. He can throw them for strikes. The delivery works. He just needs to get healthy. As a guy, he was a kicker and a punter, and was also a two-way guy in high school. So, an athletic guy on the mound, I think he's going to come back and we're going to, get a chance to see what he's really about once he is fully rehabbed from the elbow surgery.
All right, Jim, I didn't cross-reference the four guys that you, that the two of you were talking about today, but is Daniel Espino the highest ranked of the four on the team's top 30 prospects list?
Yes, I think so. He's on the top 100 actually. So yes. I'm not sure how many top 100 guys are in the story overall. It's interesting. I noticed the contrast when we did the hitters last week, almost all the guys, except for Blaze Jordan, who reclassified and was very young, were guys who were signed internationally. Mm-hmm. Most of them in January or were drafted out of this year's draft. But because pitchers generally don't get signed at age 16, most of your better international pitchers are signed later, and there aren't that many, 16-year-old pitchers commanding top bonuses. It seems like the pitchers, and I haven't done the math, but the pitchers are definitely older. They come from previous drafts. There aren't necessarily a lot of high school pitchers signing after the first few rounds. Most of them get 7-figure bonuses if they're going to sign. So that was interesting to me. But yeah, I went with Espino. He was first round pick in 2019. Because of the coronavirus pandemic, he didn't make his full season debut until this year. But he's pretty spectacular. He struck out 152 guys in 91 and two-thirds innings between two A-ball stops. The first, very, very advanced guy. He was the first high schooler the Indians had play in short season ball. In the summer, he made his debut in since Francisco Lindor. He's up to 100 miles an hour with his fastball. It's got a lot of life on it. He's got power breaking balls. He has a slider. He's got a curveball. Working on a changeup. I mean, he definitely is more. He's not one of these guys who's more thrower than pitcher. I mean, he throws a reasonable amount of strikes. It's really electric stuff. One of the more electric arms in the minors. And I think we've talked on podcasts recently about how, who's the best pitching prospect? Who are the best pitching prospects in the minors? It seems like that's constantly changing. A lot of the guys aren't necessarily panning out. They're getting hurt. I wouldn't be shocked if a year from now, Daniel Espino ranks as one of the best pitching prospects in all of baseball because he's got one of the most electric arms in the minors.
All right, Jonathan. And Next up for you, Chase Petty of the Twins, a guy who we have an ETA of 2025.
No, it's crazy. His birthday's in 2003, right? So he's, speaking of electric arms, slightly undersized, you know, frames and things like that, but, you know, first round pick just in this last draft. It was at the draft, so it was fun to see him there from New Jersey, which always makes me feel good as someone who grew up in the Garden State. He barely got his feet wet in the Florida Complex League, so there's nothing really to tell from that, but the arm strength is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, he's a guy who can touch triple digits, sits in the upper 90s. He's got an upper 80 slider that plays off the fastball really well. Misses a lot of bats. Even he's got good feel for a changeup. It can be a little too firm. Everything he throws is hard, but he has a feel for it. So I think that it's going to come. You know, there's a little reliever risk just because there's some effort and he's not the biggest guy in the world. The command, you know, is something that was questioned leading, you know, into the draft. But, against good competition, like on the summer showcase circuit, brief sample size as a pro, like he finds the strike zone. So we'll have to wait and see how he develops and what happens over the course of a full season. But a really exciting electric arm, albeit in a slightly smaller package.
And we go from a slightly smaller package and someone you described as not the biggest guy in the world to the biggest guy in the world, Eury Pérez.
Yeah, you know, Eury Pérez fascinates me. You know, I was talking about how you don't see a lot of 16-year-old pitchers get signed. And he did get signed at age 16. He wasn't a big-ticket guy. He was $200,000 out of the Dominican Republic in 2019 by the Marlins. And he was 6'4", 155 at age 16. And he's now 6'8", 200. Maybe he's still growing because he's still only 18 years old. But he was a guy who was not really on my radar until I was doing some instructional league stuff last year. We did a bunch of instructional league coverage because there wasn't a minor league season. And he was the most impressive pitcher in Marlins camp. And the thing, you know, when you see an 18-year-old who's that tall and that skinny and he's not, you know, nearly as physically strong as he's going to be, a lot of times those guys have trouble keeping all their long limbs in sync and throwing strikes. But he's pretty advanced. He has amazing body control. He pounds the strike zone. He made his debut this year at age 18, pitched so well, he made up to high A by the end of the year. And just video game numbers, 78 innings, 108 strikeouts, 26 walks, opponents hit 158 against him. Obviously, he creates a lot of angle. His fastball's gone from the mid-80s when the Marlins first scouted him to up to 97 this season. You know, sits at 91, 95. There's obviously a lot more projection in there. He's got feel for spinning a curve. He's got aptitude for using a changeup. He throws with almost, you know, very little effort. And he doesn't really seem fazed by anything. He throws strikes. You know, virtually every hitter in pro ball he's faced has been older than him. And he's had a lot of success. So I think he's not on the top 100 prospects list yet. But there's another guy who I think is going to be upwardly mobile. And if he continues to pitch like he did this year, I think he'll be on the top 100 prospects list at some point next year.
All right. Those are four of the 30 young hurlers that you can see in our story that will be up later this week on MLB.com/pipeline, the youngest ranked pitching prospect for each team. All right, guys. This week, the passing of a true baseball legend. I don't know that in all of my days of working in baseball, if I can recall many people who were as universally loved as Roland Heeman. I remember, you know, hearing about his name from when I first started working in baseball. And the funny thing about it to me was he seemed to be so revered and so respected and so loved that I think for a long time, I didn't actually realize what he had done in the game, because whenever you heard about him, it was just, that's what you heard. Like, everybody loves Roland Heeman. And I know that you two are certainly no exceptions.
I don't even know where to start, to be honest with you. I think, you know, what's so amazing about Roland, you know, just in all the things he said are true, to have a guy who was so revered and so approachable at the same time. You know, people have asked sort of like your favorite Roland Heeman stories. I don't have any like incredible tales. And if you read the story that Scott Merkin wrote, about his passing and all the things he did, and, you know, when he was a general manager and going to the upper deck and shaking all the ushers' hands in the upper deck and things of that nature, it didn't matter if you were a superstar, a general manager, a reporter just starting out, he would have time for you. And that's the thing that I remember. I had countless conversations with him at the Arizona Fall League, which he's, rightfully given credit for being the architect of. And he loved the Fall League, and he loved talking about the Fall League and telling stories about it, and I would run into him at the winter meetings, at times. And it was, his wealth of knowledge just from his own lived experience in the game. I don't think it's unparalleled, and the amount of people who he came in contact with, who he helped, I don't know that we'll ever be able to fully quantify his impact. It's run so deep over the enormous length of his incredibly rich career in life.
Yeah. I mean, I tweeted yesterday. I don't think anybody is more universally beloved than Roland was in baseball. I don't think you could find anybody to say a bad word about him. I tweeted yesterday, he may have helped more people get jobs than anybody in baseball history. And if you just want to talk about people he helped beyond that, I mean, he helped set up a foundation to provide financial assistance to scouts who fell on hard times. He convinced the baseball owners single-handedly, he gets credit for this, to approve a pension plan for non-uniform personnel, which he later called his greatest contribution to sport. He was president of an association that helped provide scholarships to former players and other players connected with the game to get their college degrees, which he was very proud of. I talked to Roland about that on numerous occasions.
That
stuff, and I think rightfully, outshines like his baseball career, but his baseball career was pretty, crazy impressive too. I mean, he was an assistant, I think, farm and scouting director with the Milwaukee Braves when he was there when they won the championship in 1957. He was a scouting director with the Los Angeles Angels. And in fact, he was the guy, I mean, obviously with ownership's approval, who signed Rick Reichert for $205,000 in 1964, which was kind of the final straw that brought along the draft. He became general manager of the White Sox, the Orioles. He helped build the Diamondbacks. He went back to the White Sox again. I remember seeing him after the White Sox won the World Series in 2005. I think the way it went, if I remember this correctly, didn't they win an extra inning game that went really long and then win another game later that same day? Anyway, they won the World Series, I believe, on Roland's birthday. So he thought that was pretty cool. So he had an amazing baseball career. I mean, he helped build the Diamondbacks, even though he left a year before they won the World Series, or he would have been part of a World Series championship with three different clubs. But as amazing as that baseball career was in terms of, what clubs did on the diamond, I think he's going to be remembered I was going to say he's helped thousands of people. I mean, he literally might have helped 10,000 people, whether it was, like I said, with getting jobs or, you needed some financial assistance or getting a college degree. He was super helpful to Alan Simpson when Alan Simpson was starting Baseball America in the early 80s. I mean, I don't think he ever stopped learning, and he was always very, very encouraging and helpful to anyone who came in contact with him.
And to tie together our two most recent podcasts now, Brad Selick, the Orioles scouting director, who was with us just last week. Jim, you're talking about the many, many people that Roland Heeman helped. And I don't know whether he specifically helped Brad Selick, but I did read a story, and you guys may have read this in The Athletic as well, where Brad's dad was remembering hearing Roland speak at Sox Fest. And Brad grew up outside of Chicago, and they went and Brad's dad was recalling that some fans were hanging around to talk to Roland afterward and get pictures and autographs. And Brad stuck around for like 20 minutes, and he had a handwritten note that he wanted to give Roland Heeman. that basically just said, what do I need to do to get into the baseball business as a, like a 14 or 15 year old kid. And, you know, may not have even realized then that he was going to the perfect place.
And the perfect that would be the guy to talk to. Yes.
Yeah. All right. Our condolences to the Heeman family and friends. Just a titan of baseball. All right. We want to wrap up here by answering a question from the mailbag. This comes from Kyle Weatherly at Kyle Weatherly 6 is the Twitter handle. And Kyle says, I noticed there are only 4 third base prospects currently on the top 100 prospects list. And one of those I think may fall off the list. So are there any current third base prospects or third base prospects in the upcoming draft that may make the top 100 prospects list?
Jim, you want to go first?
Sure. You know, I'm actually more intrigued. I will answer half the question, Jonathan. I will leave you the other half. I am probably more intrigued by the draft third baseman.
That's fair.
Than I am by, you know, the minor league third baseman. I do like Miguel Vargas a little bit, but I think Jacob Berry, who we talked about when we were drafting players with Greg, I think he's the best offensive player in college baseball. I don't know if he sticks at third base. I think he'll probably break into pro ball as a third baseman. I think he will jump onto the top 100 when he signs. You know, Jace Young is probably going to play second at Texas Tech. He could wind up at third base. You know, he's a real interesting guy. You know, as I mentioned, Jonathan, I loved your pick of Cam Collier. I could see Cam Collier making the top 100 pretty quickly too. And I'd also keep an eye on, I'll give you a couple more guys who are outside the first round right now but could play their way in. Caden Wallace at Arkansas has got a chance to stick at third base. And Peyton Graham at Oklahoma, who's a shortstop now and probably is the third baseman. So I think there's a number of third. Nolan McClain, Oklahoma State's another guy I like. And there's even – I will stop now. Tucker Thomae will be the last guy I'll mention in high school. There are a ton of third basemen in this draft who can hit. So I think this year's draft, if we look up a year, 18 months after the draft, we'll have several representatives on the top 100 prospects list.
I mean, I guess this is my own fault. I'll let you go first. So you're like, you took the most intriguing part. Brooks Lee, by the way, I think will probably be at third.
He could wind up there too. You're right.
Yeah, I think he's in there at third base. I don't think there are that many guys on the pro side. You mentioned Miguel Vargas. Jake Weatherly said, you know, the guy he's referring to dropping off the top 100 might be Nolan Jones. There aren't that many other. I'll throw one out there only because I brought him up before. I think a few podcasts ago, we answered a question about maybe it was guys who perform well in the fall league who could jump onto the top 100. And I don't know if Ezekiel Duran ends up being an everyday third baseman, the Rangers prospect, but he played a lot of third in the fall league. You know, he ended up making. He was number 15 on our AFL top 25. Obviously had a really good fall league coming off of a year where he almost had a 2020 regular season. He is the one guy who, if he is going to be playing third, then I would consider him for at least the top 10 third baseman list. And, you know, I guess double down on what I had said at the time when we answered that earlier question, that he's someone of interest to me as a potential top 100 talent, without trying to sort of put too much weight on an Arizona Fall League performance.
All right. Thanks to Kyle Weatherly for that question. Thanks very much to Greg Amsinger of MLB Network for joining us here on the podcast today. That's going to do it for this week's MLB Pipeline podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss an episode. If you're enjoying the show or have any suggestions, leave us a rating and a review. Thanks for listening, everybody. See you next week.